What's up? It's Tuesday, September 27, 2011. This is episode 17 of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined, as always, by the now Check 6 pain user, EG Idra and EG In Control. What's up, guys?
What's up, bitch?
Nice.
What's up, bitches?
Nice. Thank you.
He says bitches.
What is up back, Jeff? I never get it that way, and I kind of liked it.
Well, I'll give it to you.
We're going to start off like that tonight, are we, buddy?
Okay. Yeah.
Another week has passed, guys. Again, thanks for joining us. I know, actually, Idra, I don't know if you even want to get into it, but as the show was beginning, Idra said, man, it's been one of those sort of days, and you're getting ready to go to IEM, but you had a unique problem.
Yeah, we got the invite, the official invite from IEM like a week ago, so we couldn't send in the visa application until last minute. I'm going to get this notification that I actually don't have any pages left in my passport. It's completely full. So I have to do a rush application to get extra pages added and then send in the visa application. And so I'm going to leave tomorrow night, and I'm supposed to receive my passport in the mail tomorrow afternoon. So we'll see if it works out. But that's a pretty cool problem to have. It's terrible.
It is definitely a unique problem. Like, yeah, we have no more room for fucking stamps. You're screwed, and you won't be able to get into this country. And I was saying, I think I saw someone else have this thing where it literally was like a thing that just stuck into the back of it. But you said you're getting a whole nother 26 pages.
Yeah, they say you can either add 26 or 52. I don't know if they just, like, it doesn't seem like the binding's big enough to hold another 26. It also sounds really, like, sketchy to just staple them onto the back of it or whatever.
Here's my passport.
Like 80 billion pages. So in summary, for everyone listening, Idris traveled too many places. He had to fill out papers to get sent somewhere else.
When you're an old man, you can look through your passport.
Yeah.
That have all those stamps. Is such a pain in the ass, but in the midst of doing it, like days before he can go, he was pissed off. He was doing paperwork, obviously. But I was like, what's the problem? He's like, I don't have any pages for my passport. And then he goes... I was like, yeah, okay.
Oh, like
first
I said,
first world problems
indeed. But you have to admit, though, Jeff, it's still a pain in the ass to deal with.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not trying to take away from that. It is.
Yeah, so I'm glad that StrifeGrow is taking care of that. How are you doing, pain user?
I'm good. Pretty excited about IPL Atlantic City and Check 6, actually. Yeah. Two pretty recent developments for me in my gaming life.
Before you talk about IPL, I want to talk about Check 6 a little bit. It happened last Wednesday. Yep. So we didn't get a shot. You were VP last week. Man.
I know.
You're like a different guy, just suddenly.
Check 6P.
I kind of hinted at it at the end of last week's Inside the Game. I said we were going to have some pretty big developments.
You did.
There it is. Boom.
You did.
Check 6 basically picked up all of the best players from VP, and we made some roster cuts on the way over. And then I'm pretty sure everybody's going to be playing out like a huge tournament to determine seeding and place within the team. And then
they're
probably going to do some more roster cuts.
Is that going to be broadcast, or is it going to be like in-house tournament, quote-unquote in-house tournament?
It's probably going to be like in-house. Behind the scenes, I don't know. It's
I don't know,
weird.
Bro. That like, seems should, like but, some good content to
you
make.
You should invite some other players and then have them eliminate people from Check 6, and then they can the bottom 16 get eliminated. Like, oh no, I'm not on a team anymore.
It's like team
so,
elimination.
So yeah, I don't know. When all is said and done, we should have a pretty solid roster in place to continue to go to events. And I'm pretty excited about it because Check 6 has been around forever.
They have been.
They're a solid organization, and they're certainly capable of sending me to events. So I'm pretty excited about the future with them, and it's nice to know that I have a stable team.
Well, I would just throw out there, you know, the fact that you said they've been around for quite a while. It's, you know, people should definitely, you know, look up a little bit about the history of Check 6. They've been around, you know, I used to play Check 6 in Quake 3. I think we had mentioned that before.
Enlighten us.
Well, I mean, they are amongst the, when people think of the old school clans that led the North America esports pilgrimage, it was Complexity, Team 3D, EG, and Check 6 was another one of those clans.
Zets.
I mean, there's a few more out there. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to leave everyone out, but I think the Check 6 was certainly up there as far as when there were North American competitions that they were always representing. Maybe not like winning teams or winning players all the time, but they always had a presence and were able to get sponsors and you know, compete for many years. So it's nice to see a familiar name that's been around for quite some time.
I did not know that. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. I mean, from Quake to Counter-Strike, Source. So yeah, I don't know if they've gone beyond like StarCraft II, if they have League of Legends or anything like that. But I wouldn't be surprised.
Pain user, I'm happy to see you survive the redundancy cuts.
Indeed,
that you're still on a team.
My TPS reports were accurate and up to date.
Yeah.
They didn't sit you down and go like, "So what exactly do you do?"
We have another 6'8" commentator. We filled that quota.
Yeah, we're fresh out of giant commentators here. It's kind of cool though, because you can never tell how tall I am when I'm sitting at a desk. I look perfectly normal.
Your upper body actually isn't that gigantic.
It's like maybe 2 or 3 inches longer than normal. My legs are
ridiculous. Every nerd on YouTube's like actual worst nightmare, where they're like, "You're an idiot. I could beat you up easily," and then it turns out he's like sitting right there, and he's like, "Roar! Oh shit!"
The Mario mushroom.
Oh,
but yeah, I'm super, super excited about it. And then getting a little nervous about IPL Atlantic City.
What do you mean? What are you getting nervous about, man?
Oh, I'm not nervous. Like the good kind of nervous.
Okay.
You know, like before
I'm anxious.
There's so much pressure on you guys. The whole world is watching, Pain User.
They're definitely.
The whole world.
The whole entire world.
No, I know. But hopefully we'll perform, and hopefully there's not too many issues. I know we're working with a pretty big company to help with all the streaming and stuff like that. So hopefully that goes without a hitch. That's what I'm like the most concerned about. I think, you know, the live venue, as long as we have a bunch of seats filled and they're all StarCraft fans, I think that'll go great. But I'm really more concerned with just having a flawless stream run through the whole event. I think that's really important.
Well, the tournament too, like that big of an open bracket, actually just running the logistics of it can be really, really hard.
Yep.
I don't know. I just hope it all goes smoothly.
You'll be fine.
I mean, it's over 4 days too, which is kind of nice.
Yep.
You know, some of the other events, obviously, well, with the final day being a little bit more condensed, but I hope that makes a significant difference. I mean, every 5 or 4 day event I've ever gone to has been awesome, pretty much. I don't know why that is, but
just less stress, man. More time, more room for error, more relaxation time.
Yeah, thank God the first 2 days are only for seeding, because I actually fly in from China like the night before the tournament starts.
Oh God,
it's going to be awful.
Yeah. Are you going to kill your hatchery with your drones one of those games? Be like, all right, guys.
No, since, I am not Drewby.
Since, well, let me ask you this.
Careful, Greg. You play him later today.
Slasher.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Slasher.
Careful,
was like.
Greg.
On Live on 3 last week, Slasher was like, those games don't really matter. It's, you know, blah, 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 blah. What do you think?
Slasher,
if someone
is something controversial? Oh.
What do you think about those games? Like, I mean, obviously you said, you know, you're coming back. What's your feelings on that?
I don't know. Seeding at tournaments like this, it helps a little, but there's just so many good players, and it's so easy to lose one best of three that there's a pretty fair chance that a really good Korean will get second in their group, and you can hit them even if you get the first seed or however it works. And then people coming out of the open bracket, there's a fair chance they're going to be some of the best players in the tournament anyway. At MLGs, it's always like that. Like, the person coming out of the open bracket is often one of the strongest in the tournament. So, yeah, seeding, it helps a little, but it's not particularly relevant. Like, the real tournament's on Saturday and Sunday. Definitely.
I guess I would rephrase my question to be like, you know, you said obviously you're going to be coming back, jet lag, etc., but do you still give you know, those games like every single ounce of StarCraft II that you've got.
I've never really understood that. Like, I don't view that as a decision you make going into a game. Like, I don't have to, I don't have to apply myself to play more than, like, I play a game and I try to win, and that's it.
That,
I mean, maybe perhaps the spirit of the question you're trying to get to, which does exist, is like, if I play a ladder game and I've got a leg hiked up over the back of my head because I'm that flexible. No, I'm not.
Oh, but he is.
That's very much so different from if I'm sitting on stage playing up against a top, you know, Korean or non-Korean. Like, there's a sense of importance, but every competitive StarCraft II player tries to win every game they play. There's no one, for the most part, obviously that's an absolute truth, so it's not completely true, but seeding is important, but like Greg said, like, at this level of tournaments, there's, like, no difference at all. I remember when the NASL had their offline final, everyone was complaining because Rhett, the number one seed, had to play the number 16, which was Puma. But the number 15 seed was MC, who took second place. It's like, it doesn't matter at a certain point.
Right, right. Well, I will be sure to echo that to him tomorrow night during Live on 3. I thought that he was pretty fucking silly, quite frankly, to even talk about it, but whatever.
You can't fault him. He's never played.
I can fault him because I think it's a stupid statement and I don't fucking understand it. So
what exactly was the statement?
Well, just basically that, like, oh, well, these matches don't matter. And I was like, well, there's two reasons why I believe they matter. Is that number one, do you think the person who is at home, like, just who wants to watch awesome StarCraft is like, that this match doesn't matter? No, they see StarCraft player X and StarCraft player Y, and they fucking go on Reddit, and they're like, when this post is 2 hours old, the most epic fucking StarCraft 2 match is going to happen. Ah! So from a spectator point of view, it's like, oh my God, we're going to see these unbelievable matches right out of the gate. The other thing that you know, basically both Idra and Jeff just sort of reiterated is the fact that you can't put a measure on, like, I'm going to play at, like, a 45 per... No. Actually, that's too much. 43% level of StarCraft 2 today, pain user, so that I... Because, you know, these matches don't really matter. It's like, that's... Is that how any true competitor's mind works?
The only merit that could have is if you like, have some kind of revolutionary build order and you're holding that back for when it actually does matter. It needs to be a surprise.
Fair enough.
But in terms of actual effort you put in the game, how well you're executing and stuff, no, that's always going to be on the same level unless there's something else holding you back. It's not that hard to apply yourself like that. I mean, people just
especially at a tournament.
That.
Like, when you're at a tournament, you're just, like, in tournament mode or participating in a tournament, whether you're home or there physically.
One of the traps, too, though, is that StarCraft is mostly a mental game. Like, it's insanely mental. So if you have a quote-unquote easy round or it doesn't really, you don't need to win it because you're going to move on to something else, those are the traps that a player can fall into. I know I've personally fallen into a lot of those. But the people who you see constantly winning tournaments and doing really, really well, they typically get through those kind of games with the same mentality that they have going up against a boxer and Nesty and that shit.
I believe that. Well, all right, look, before we go on to our first thing, and we got a lot of questions, hopefully letters will be able to catch up on a little bit tonight, do some open phones. The chat is so curious, and now I am so curious that I must know, what is the Muslim watching behind your shoulder, Jeff? We must know now.
What is it? Oh.
What is
Ben, what are you watching? Ben! What are you watching?
What is he watching?
Ben watches bad movies, man.
What did he say?
I didn't even hear what he said.
The Ugly Truth.
The Ugly Truth. Okay. Someone was like, no, I'm positive it's Game of Thrones. I'm like, dude, I don't know.
It doesn't look like it. What?
I don't know.
It's like a nicely
there was a
house.
Few moments where I thought for sure he was just watching some bareback, you know, something going on there, and then it switched up.
That's what I figured the assumption was when I saw it on Jesse.
Our lunch break is between 3 and 5, so Ben's taking a breather before he starts killing faces once again.
He always is killing faces, too. And all right, so we've had a week now with the patch. 1 week later, there was a lot of sort of speculation as the patch had just come out at the airing of last week's show. I definitely feel like the audience wanted to get a follow-up with a lot of you guys. Idri, you said some interesting things before the show. Jeff, obviously a lot of questions about what you feel about the state of the PvP now. But even though 1 week is still not an incredible amount of time, and there's probably still things that'll come out, I think that just based off of some of the things that you guys said early on, that there's definitely some things to chat about here. So, I don't know if anyone wants to start, or maybe even Idr, we start with what you had said about the ZVT matchup, which a lot of people, of course, talking about ZVP right now. But anyone want to just fire off with this? They had something on their mind they want to go, or should I start whipping out different things?
Well, for ZVT, what we were talking about was just the turtleneck build with actually Raven support. And the combination of the better Hunter Seeker missile and the worse Neural Parasite makes it really, really strong. Exactly what Gumiho did to Nesti on Tal'Darim in WCG Group B a few nights ago. And basically you just sit and you get this army and it's like a death ball on crack. It just, no Zerg army does anything to it. The Hunter Seeker missiles help a lot with zoning, and because all the Terran units are so highly ranged, you can't go in and dodge it and run back out. Like, go in and draw the Hunter Seeker missile and then run away. Because you're taking tank and Thor volleys the entire time, and it's just, all your units die one way or the other, and it's just incredibly powerful.
Have you been seeing it all, though, in play outside of, like, that one match?
I have not run into it. A couple of, like, Strifecore ran into it on Ladder, and we've seen it in a few games on GOM and WCG and stuff, so it doesn't have widespread, like, attention or knowledge yet, but I think it will.
Okay, so, basically it's just, and I had asked you a couple of questions in regard to it, like, I'd asked you about how many Ravens were you seeing? You said, what, four?
Was it four or five?
I think in that game, yeah, he had four or five.
Now, some people are saying, too, that, like, they have tried to activate the Hunter Seeker missile in their play, but maybe felt like it came out too long. And I had asked you about that, and even Pain User, you had commented that you thought it was something that took quite a while to get to.
Yeah, I mean, just the cost of it alone. I mean, the several Ravens, 100, 200 apiece, the Starport, 150, 100, and the add-on. The upgrade, 150, 150, all the time invested in all those upgrades and units. I mean, it's insane, the cost. It might be a little bit better now, but, I mean, at least in the game that Greg just mentioned and that I just watched, I think the combination of the weaker Neural Parasite and weaker Fungal might just be enough to just start going mech again. I don't even know if the Ravens were, like, a necessity.
I think they definitely help, but the bigger thing is that it just prevents mass muta, which means you can always have more tanks in your mix because you don't have to be so Thor-heavy. And more tanks just pretty much nullifies ground, so then it just limits the options that Zerg has because the HSM is really big versus mutas. You can't just run in and magic box all the Thors anymore.
It seemed like another thing he did was stay super low on SCV count because his army was enormous. Like I don't think he went above 55 or 60 SCVs. And he went up to super quick 3 base and was mining all the gas, and that army was just enormous.
He had 4 or 5 orbitals to compensate, too. That's something more Terrans need to do. Like, if you have more than 60 SCVs, it's actually too much.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, from what I saw, that build just looks really, really solid. And I think we'll definitely start seeing a resurgence in mech versus Zerg, because it was always really good. It was just like, Fungal and Neural were really good at dealing with it. You could Neural from miles away, grab all the tanks and a bunch of Thors, and then just swarm on top of it, and it was tough to deal with. But, you know, now if you're really slow and progressive with your push, the shorter Neural range, you can use tanks to pick off the infestors, and I think it's more viable now.
Yeah. Ghost Mech still hasn't really gotten the attention it deserves either, so that's going to be really strong.
What do you foresee then if this starts to catch on that, like, the really big, the big answer is going to be for it?
I don't really know. ZVT has a lot of really difficult to fix problems. The Hellion double expansion builds that are finally starting to gain popularity. That's a problem, and I've absolutely no idea how to fix it because everything involved in it is a core unit where if you nerf or buff it, it's going to have really big impacts on the rest of the game and other matchups. So, I don't know. ZVT is in a really tough spot. I don't envy Blizzard right now, but they need to fix something. I have no idea what though.
Right. And how much do you think the neural range nerf affects, you know, is a result of this too?
It affects that specifically quite a bit, but I think that Ghost Mech, like UEMP, the Infestors, I think Ghost Mech is still the stronger build, and that hasn't been addressed at all. People just haven't really discovered it that much yet.
I think an earlier Ultra transition would be really good. Like, if you take 4 or 5 base much faster and try and get Ultras out earlier.
That's where the HSM comes in, because you can afford to have that tank backbone, because like I said, the mutas aren't as big of a deal. And with more tanks, then the Thor or the fast Ultras aren't as dangerous as they would be versus pure Thor or plus support.
It looks pretty nasty. I mean, and again, I think it comes down to one of those things we've talked about a few times on the show, which is that, like, you know, really all that changed was the speed of the Hunter Seeker missile. And then suddenly that sort of makes it a viable way to mix things up. You know, we saw similar things happen with the Phoenix when the cost was going to be reduced, and suddenly, you know, the Phoenix was being used more in builds in a different capacity. So, I mean, with that being said, how quickly do you think it's going to be before we start to see, like, a larger transition to this, Greg?
I have no idea. Ghost Mech has been overpowered for, like, months and months, and people still don't use it, so no predictions.
Okay. Incontrol, any thoughts on this before we kind of move on to some of the other issues?
A lot of the stuff that I see from this composition and this style... I mean, certainly StarCraft II is still 1 year old, so it's not like every answer I can give is like, well, the game will do it, because obviously we just got patched, so there's still things being changed, but I would encourage their players to change up their playstyle against that a lot. Like, when I played against Mech and Brood War, which of course is very different, I'm not trying to say it's exactly the same, but one tenet that I see remaining very true is you very rarely could ever fight them head-on. You absolutely had to counter. You absolutely had to be like, oh, okay, he's meching. I need to double or triple expand right now because I need to have, like, literally twice the economy he does so that I can come close to hanging with him later. I mean, that was just the way it was. So when I see a lot of these Zergs still doing the same stuff and then they're facing mech and they're not changing their gameplay, I don't give too much credence into, like, well, this is really impossible to beat and I can't do it because they're just doing the same stuff. So until I start seeing heavy counters in a lot of, like, indirect combat, and then like double and triple expanding, I'm not going to think that this is completely broken yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Thoughts on what InControl just had to say?
It's true that that's like the right way to do it, but the way this is done, you just sit and turtle until max, and you're only aiming for that one army. And that one army, like, it's so powerful that you can't even really chip away at it. You just keep your buildings with the army, and you run around the map clearing off the Zerg. So, yeah. And the other thing is that the units that can actually touch that army, like Broodlords and kind of Ultras, they don't really have the mobility to play that counterattacking style very well. Ultras more so than Broodlords, but then Broodlords are much better than Ultras at fighting it. So if you're playing a Lair Tech army, then the army just shits on you. So you can try and counterattack, but you're never going to touch the army. And if you're playing Hive Tech, then it's really difficult to play counterattacky, and you still can't really beat the army, even in a head-on fight.
A big part of the reason why Mech was... defensible as a Zerg player was because of Dark Swarm, and that function doesn't really exist in StarCraft II. And he's right. Broodlords, which are like the only other option at the Hive Tech for any kind of direct fighting, are extremely slow. But my biggest recommendation, again, would be angles. Like, you couldn't fight a dug-in Terran army in Brood War. You just flat-out couldn't. In StarCraft II, you do have Fungal, so if you catch a mech army in transition and then broadside it from all angles with a full surround, a lot of those units go down pretty damn quick, actually. So, I mean, it's just stuff like that. It takes a lot more work, that's for damn sure.
Well, and as you all said during the analysis of this, is that, of course, it's still a little bit too early to tell, but the fact that it's sort of been a result of the patch and sort of some new styles that's come from it, anytime we see even the most minor change in a unit, we've almost seen some sort of build emerge that is involved that. So... we got a couple other questions that I guess I could also, like, patch into here. And a lot of people were asking in chat as well. Anyone want to comment on whether 111 is easier to hold off as a Protoss because of the Immortal range? Or is it harder to pull off as a Terran because of the Immortal range? Have any of you had experience as far as that's concerned?
And I've had like a few games.
And have you noticed crazy. An immediate difference?
I mean, yeah. The Immortals are much better. I think the Immortals were kind of a like situational unit before that was a little bit weak. Now they're actually really good because they can actually engage in the battle now. They just kind of stood around in the back before and let the Stalkers do the work, and they didn't really fill a role as a tank or a damage dealer, because not only are they not really taking hits, they're not really dishing any damage out either. So now they're in a position where they can stay in front, they can tank hits, and they can attack tanks and marauders and other priority targets. So they fill their role much better, and I think it makes it a little bit easier. It's still really hard to hold off, just because the build hits you with so much brute force at a point in the game that's it's just really unexpected. But I think it definitely helps the Toffs. There's no doubt about it.
I think just as the game continues to go on, like we've already seen, the 1-1-1's taking a little bit more of a backseat. Yes, it still makes its appearance. Yes, if a player mishandles it, it seems completely overpowered. But I've been watching Puma get beaten by, you know, Mana, and even I think Nightend from Romania took a game off of him against the 1-1-1 as well. We're seeing it start to get mitigated just a little bit. I think it's in part because the Immortal range, but I think actually more even than that, it's just the metagame development. A lot more Protoss are doing one gate expand into like conscientious, could be facing a 1-1-1 type build, so they're leaving Stalkers at their mineral lines again. They're going Immortal first or Observer first, either way, depending on how good of a read they have on the 1-1-1. And then they know how to handle it. You know, multiple angles flanking, dropping Immortals on the tanks, or even just walking in towards the tanks. But it's much more manageable these days. But also I think Terrans have shied away from it just a little bit more too, because early game Immortals really strong. So if you don't have proper static defenses in place, or your build doesn't take into account the fact that he could just do a 3-gate robo pressure, then you're going to be crushed before you ever get to that point anyways.
All right.
I think Tosses are just getting much more well-versed in dealing with it now. They understand like when they can and can't make units. They're eking out a few extra units before the 1-1-1 gets there. They're not so afraid of expanding anymore. Like, a lot of people are just expanding and then getting out as much as they possibly can and adding a few extra gateways. And I think it's just a matter of figuring it out. Enough Terrans have been using it that Protosses are starting to have a deeper understanding of how to deal with it. And at first, it was just kind of like, holy shit, like, what are we doing here?
I do think the Immortal change is one of the best changes Blizzard's made, though. It makes PvP more diverse. You can make Immortals a stronger counter to Colossus. Like, unupgraded Colossus have the same range as an Immortal. That's really strong, so it takes away kind of the two Colossus no-range push that a lot of people were doing and winning games with just off of build orders. PvZ, it makes a pretty good difference, but not quite as much, I don't think. The Stalker Immortal Templar style is still really strong, and of course it just got stronger with the Immortal having extra range, but we're not seeing that quite as much. But then PvT, I think it puts a little bit more fear in the belly of the Terran in the early game, so it was necessary. I think it's pretty nice.
I think it's one of those changes in control that I'm pretty sure that I haven't seen anyone bitch. Like, oh my god, this fucking Immortal range upgrade is horseshit. Like, I've not seen it. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on it, Indra? I think you'd be like kind of the if you say, I'm okay with it, then...
Two-base Immortal Stalker Sentry All-Ins are way too good for Zerg right now.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
That's what I was going to say. Well, I think gateway unit timing pushes with Immortals are going to be really, really strong against Zerg. They're already pretty good.
But how many Immortals?
Like two or three?
Anywhere from 2 to 4. But yeah, if you open Roach, it's like, well...
It was a close one,
But, well, you know, I mean...
You almost made a change without someone bitching, but then you...
Safety. I know. It was so close. It was so close in control. But I guess I would retort with, again, was that the range, or was that just someone going, oh, well, fuck.
No, the range actually makes a huge difference, because Stalkers and Immortals having the same range means they don't dance around each other. They just all shoot and kill your stuff.
Yeah.
And I would imagine on certain maps specifically, that gets to be almost... You know, a little ridiculous.
It's probably really good on, like, Zelnaga.
Right.
Well, Yeah, Zelnaga. Actually, yeah, Zelnaga, because the only way to play Zelnaga was like Roche counterattack, and that was pretty good because you could deny a third, but now they just do that, build off two base, and go kill you. And if you open Roaches, you're in trouble. And
yeah, how do you hold
Roaches,
that?
There's not too much else to do. I don't know.
Roach, Hydra, Ling.
It's unbeatable. It's unbeatable.
Well no, because you can open like two base Hydra or something, you hold it easy, but then you're fucked for the rest of the game.
I know. Look at Code S. All those Protoss.
Nugal got eliminated before the patch.
Not doing a thing.
What about the P versus Z 6-0 night we had a couple of days ago in Code A?
Did you see the Zergs, Greg? Are you prepared to give the excuse that you give every time a Zerg player?
Because yeah, those were fucking awesome Protosses. They deserved a 6-0.
Greg, can we have a moment here?
Moment.
Okay. Let's go last night. Code S. That's where the better players are playing.
Hongen's not a better player.
Genius.
Hongen and Genius are cheesy as fuck.
Genius lost to Terrence.
Alright, okay. So just so I can make
PvT
this pretty
is
clear,
hard. I don't really care about PvT. But
you're now saying that the Protoss players are bad in Code S.
No, Hongen.
But in Code A, the Zerg players were better, but they lost.
Stop being a dick. I said Hongen's bad, not Code S players are bad.
Okay. Well, I think
Hongen's
I think
pretty
you're
bad.
He goes two star void into Blink Stalkers versus Mass Hydra. He's awful.
He's funny to watch though. Like you never know what he's gonna do.
What isn't he? Isn't he gonna be at IEM or no? Where is he gonna?
No, he's going to MLG Orlando.
Okay, that's right. That's right. God, I'm an idiot. Yeah. And in whose group is he in?
Machines know? Group. I don't Machines, know which group that okay. is.
He'll probably do terrible. I'm sure he won't do very well at all. No.
Sorry, I just had to let that look sink in a little bit, Jeff.
It's gonna do pretty good.
Let's talk since we're talking about Protoss, you know, and it's like a hot topic. Why don't we talk about PvP and in control? Why don't you give us your thoughts? I mean,
PvP.
Yeah, with the new patch.
I'm a little bit more interested in why Pain User just said he didn't like PvP right now. Pain User.
Yeah, what was that?
What?
Dude.
We could almost do the thing where no one's bitching about PvP right now, but then Pain User, we got the two negative Nancy safety nets. Oh my god. Inside the bitter game. Go ahead.
I'm more just laughing at Jeff right now, not PvP. Jeff's cracking me up. But PvP to me is like, it seems like it's the matchup that's most centered around build order losses, and I hate build order losses. I feel like build order losses are just kind of like a retarded sort of
for
thing to have in the game.
For certainly the people in chat who are like, what the f- is a build order? Like, will you at least explain for the audience?
Alright, it's like player A goes 4-gate on Tal'Darim. Player B knows that 4-gate is super common on Tal'Darim, so he goes 1-gate into 3-gate DT. Oops. You don't have a robo, you don't have a obs, you auto-lose. Like, stuff like that happens all the time in PvP. And as a spectator and a commentator, it's just like, I don't know. I think it takes a lot away from the matchup. It's just kind of a lot of, like, dice rolling. And then not only that, even if both players do the same build, the micro in PvP has such a snowball effect. It's like in the early game, a player that 9 times out of 10 will have superior micro, and he's a great micro player, he'll lose like 2 stalkers on some fluke maneuver where he accidentally moves in too far and instantly gets 2 stalkers picked off. And then it's just like game. Cause like they're both warping in units at the same cycle. They both have 4 gateways. And as soon as you lose 2 units in that early game exchange, it's just like a snowball effect. You continually lose units over and over and over. And it's, I don't know.
I agree. Pre-patch, PvP was terrible.
Yeah. I haven't really seen that much of it post-patch though. So
that's where we're going to get into it right now in control. I thought that's where we were going, but
like, has it changed drastically? I haven't,
it has, Pain User. There's a lot of changes. PvP is one of the better mirror matches, as far as I'm concerned right now. No warping in on the ramp means the 4-gate, for all intents and purposes, is dead unless you're facing extremely abusable. I'm not sure if that's a word. An abusive opening, like if a guy's going double gas, stole your gas, 1-gate robo, and you 4-gate him, you're going to crack that ramp and you're going to kill him. But in the past, it used to be you could 4-gate everything, and it doesn't matter what build the guy was doing. If he made a mistake, he could lose. And that was really, really volatile. You mentioned Tal'Dorei Altar. That's just a down. That's just a dumb map for PvP in general. You're going to see fast ET. You're going to see Forgate 99% of the time.
Yeah.
It's just not good. It's way too big of a coin flip. But every other map, because of the reduced vision and the ramp mechanic the way it is, PvP is freaking awesome right now. I think it was also really nice that they slowed down Blink, because a lot of the problems you brought up where it's just like you move out and whoops, he's got Blink, now you're dead. There's a larger window of opportunity for that to be less the case, because other parts of your build could develop where you can compensate for that Blink. So maybe you have an extra Immortal or two. Maybe you have an extra Warpin or two, or maybe you've gone DT and they went Blink. So a lot more of that kind of stuff starts to even itself out. And right now we're seeing longer, more diverse, and exciting PvP games. And I think it's a real treat for the game and everybody involved, because in the past it was, oh my god, he's going Forgate, and he's going for it. It's all down to Mike. You know, like Day9's like pulling his hair out. Like, ah, it's a stalker differential of one. And then it's like, who gives a shit? Because that's boring as hell. Now it's a lot more different and really exciting.
What would you say was the biggest change that contributed to the biggest patch change that contributed to what we're seeing now?
Probably not being able to warp it on the ramp. It's such a simple change, but it really specifically targets the Forgate. Like, you don't hear Protoss making a thread like, I used to warp in all my units on the Zerg ramp, and then he would just not know what to do, and I'd win it. Like, there's none of that. It was only for the Forgate. And for the people that aren't entirely clear what I'm talking about, it used to be that you'd put a pylon at the base of the ramp of your opponent, and you'd be able to warp in above the force field on the ramp, which gives you vision of the space above the ramp, so then you can warp in. If you can't warp in on that ramp, then you don't get that vision, and a single force field can now defend against a Forgate.
Okay. Does anyone else have anything to contribute to this as far as PvP goes?
I saw a couple games of Axelav where he actually expanded in PvP. That was pretty cool. Wasn't the same. Same old same. He dropped a Nexus. Pretty glorious.
All right. And then I would just open it up. Any other patch changes or things that you've seen post-patch that you really think have made a big difference?
Oh, we're just talking about the patch in general, not PvP?
Yeah, just in general. Or PvP. I mean, if you have other things, I want to hear them all, Jeff.
I mean, I think it's like Pax Romana for the PvP world right now, man. Everyone should be pretty happy. I think Pain User gave his pre-patch rant, which I agree with, but post-patch. Well, Greg, what do you think about PvP?
I don't watch matchups and don't have...
There we go. We did it. No complaints.
No complaints.
Otherwise, with the patch, I mean, I'll let Greg talk about the Neural Parasite one because he's been experiencing that a lot more. I haven't been experiencing the Neural Parasite.
Yeah, I haven't experienced Neural Parasite because I won't upgrade it anymore, so I don't really know.
Yeah. I think I'm a little bit apprehensive about the future for the Raven. I think that's interesting. It actually runs things down, and it always was a good spell in terms of how much damage it did. The Raven is expensive, and it comes off a Tech Lab starport, so that's a little bit more complex for Terran players. They usually just slap a reactor on there because they get two things at once, which is good. So I don't know if we're going to see it quite as much, but the fact that it can run stuff down and grave effect damage is pretty scary. So hopefully it'll be the gas that bottlenecks that kind of stuff. And we'll see. Like I said, I think the Immortal was a good change. Really loving the Mothership right now. Oh, man. It just tears around the map. It's like, what I think they should do graphically is add, like, it should tilt a little bit when it turns. Like, you know, like, it could just, like, fucking take that turn, you know what I mean? Like, and you could put, like, little wind and clouds coming off the side of it to show, like, or it breaking the sound barrier. You could put like a sonic boom that comes out around it. That'd be good.
You'd be excited about that, wouldn't you?
Oh my god,
and
shit.
And you're totally obviously...
Dustin Browder.
I thought you were being entirely serious at first, because Motherships were already pretty good. Like, only Kiwikaki made them, so no one knows about it. But they were pretty good. And now, without Neural Parasite, they're really good. So I think that people might figure that out eventually, maybe.
It is good. It's a really good support unit. It's nice, because in all my PvZs, I have a Stargate now.
I just really like Phoenix in the mid-game, and opening up with it just gets good information. But having a mothership in your army, this is something Kiwakaki has, of course, been ahead of the curve on, which he's always been ahead of the curve on, like, everything. It's just really, really good. Cheaper and cheaper. I'll let Greg talk about the Zerg ones, but I agree. The mothership is good.
I definitely want to talk just a little bit about PVZ. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about PVZ, and then we'll open up the phone lines. I think my cat actually knocked out one of my wires, and you guys sound a little bit robot-y. So we're going to take a break a little bit early, guys. So please don't go away. We'll be right back with more Inside the Game. We'll try to get everything fixed and resolved here and move on. So thanks for joining us. We'll be right back. All right, there we go. I think we're back up, guys. Sorry about that. I don't know. Cat's ruining esports, whether it's me or whatever. Pain user is not even, he wasn't able to get back with us. There he is. Okay, so we got everyone. We're all okay. Hopefully we sound okay.
Still sound like robots.
No, it sounds normal to me now.
It sounds normal to me, too.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
But, yeah, let me just make some adjustments here. Okay, while I make these adjustments, let's talk about it. PVZ. It's obviously breaking Skype, the internet, and more, but, Idra, let's hear your full thoughts on this.
I think that late game PVZ got even more Protoss favor than it was before, because Colossus now, Neural was the better answer to that, because you either have Corruptors or Neural, and with Neural, you also get Fungal as well, which is much more versatile. Corruptors, obviously, you eliminate the Colossus, and then they're just paperweights hanging there. Their only value is discouraging more Colossus, so you can then like switch to Hydroling or whatever. And also the Mothership, like we talked about before. So if Protoss manages to get up a 3 or 4 base econ, they become incredibly powerful. And Zerg still has powerful mid-game timings. However, a lot of those, the best way to start out was with Roaches, because that could defend pretty much anything and then gave you also pretty good offensive opportunities. But the strength of the Immortal plus Stalker versus Roaches is just so powerful now that I think, like, as Protosses get more refined as they figure this out, Immortal plus Stalker to secure third base and then into a macro game, plus the Warp Prism, which was already really good and just underused, and it's now starting to get more attention. People just... It feels like it's going to be really hard. But people still have a lot of stuff to figure out with it.
You mentioned mid-game timings, and one of the things that you mentioned last week was the fact that you think that Zerg might need to consider going much faster or heavier aggression versus Protoss in order to deny them the ability to go that. Have you been trying that at all? Have you found any success in that?
Well, Korean Zergs for a long time have been focusing on early mid-game aggression, just focus on completely denying a Protoss's third. And I think that definitely has to be the way you play now. Foreign Zergs were kind of allowing that third and then just playing Infestor Turtle, which had some success. Well, it was pretty effective. But now with the much weaker Infestors, I don't think it can be. And so, yeah, I think you actually have to go for that. But the Immortal makes those kind of things a lot harder. The only real threat I've seen throughout all the Korean Zerg plays so far has been Muta switches, just because of the power of Robo units so far. But that is pretty iffy in itself, and it's going to lose its surprise value really quick because Protoss started to figure it out, and that's the biggest thing it has going for it. So, I don't know. There's problems everywhere.
As a Protoss in control, do you feel like you're ripping through Zerg now?
No. When I hear Greg talk about ZVP, here's what I think he envisions. Okay,
damn,
something
I
like this.
See Jeff's webcam. I'll be right back. Relog.
And then, when I think about PVZ, I'm thinking more like this. I guess my point is, like, I don't understand talking about Protoss like they're just annihilating every Zerg, and they're impossible to beat. Once it gets to a certain point, there's no way to beat them. There's, like, literally no more Protoss in Code S, Code A.
They're doing pretty well in Code A. There's two of them left. I think there's two of them left in the top four versus one Terran, one Zerg, and they eliminated each other in a PvP. Like, Sage and JYP and, I don't know, some other, Twilight, are doing really well. And these up-and-coming Protoss are obviously, like, they do a lot of shit that Codex Protosses just don't take advantage of. Like, the openings Sage was doing last March, he was using DTs and Warp Prisms. You watch Hung, and he just fucking goes two-star Void Rain and Blink Stalker and gets rolled because he has zero talent and no brain.
I've been really liking the DT Warp Prism work from Protoss lately. Like, harassing two sides of the map at the same time. And
if you watch Codex Protosses play, I mean, there's just... They get stuck in ruts. MC goes, well, MC's code B now, but he just goes two base Colossus every single PVZ, and he gets trucked because it's a bad build. But you watch JYP and Twilight and all these other Protosses who are up and coming. People like Puzzle, not so much Alicia, but people still hype him. And they're doing a lot of other smart shit, and obviously their mechanics aren't even on that level yet, but if they did, they would have a lot of success, and they're having a lot of success anyway.
I mean, people still hype Alicia.
It's entirely possible that
a lot of their success. Did you say Protoss are having a lot of success?
No, but the ones that are,
they're winning matches. They're going through. I mean, there's two of them still left in the tournament. They haven't lost yet, and they've beaten Zergs on the way.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible that the four or five Protoss and Codex aren't particularly good, and they're just riding earlier success. I think Hong and...
I'll use the same examples you're using, only I think they're more severe. MC and Hero. Hero is probably the best Protoss right now, if not his top three. Just getting blanked by Zergs across several events recently. You can watch it very recently. Absolutely annihilated. And he does things you're describing.
He lost to a Zerg in Code A. What else has he lost to a Zerg in? That's one fucking match.
Well, that is one match. Thank you, Craig. There's other events. I'm about to list them. Calm the fuck down. IPL, he also lost for Team Liquid. He's been losing in several different events as well. I mean, he's getting blanked by Zerg.
He lost
he's
to
also
PvP. Who do you lose to in those?
Greg, I don't have them all right in front of me, but he did. I'm talking about it. We can pull him up if we need to take the time to do it. Point is that Hero's been getting beaten by Zergs. MC's
and all these other Protosses have been winning. Hero is really good if you get him into the late game because he actually turtles and uses Warp Prism Harass, but his mid game is always incredibly like unstable because he opens DTs and that leaves big timing windows if the DTs don't do any damage. And a lot of times that gets taken advantage of and he loses. I think calling him the best Protoss is pretty stupid. Like, there's a lot of other Protoss having a lot more success, playing a lot more stably, and doing all those things except doing them better.
Who's the best Protoss right now, then?
I don't know who the best is, but JYP and Sage are certainly better than him, and there's others, too.
So, I mean, on what level do you call them better? Why?
They're doing all the same, except they're doing them better and winning with them. Like, okay. they play more different builds, and they play less risky builds, and then they do the same stuff once they get in the late game that makes Hero good at the late game, except they do it without taking a lot of risks to get there. So they don't lose stupid stuff mid-game like he does, and then they still have the same strengths late game.
Well, it's pretty hard to have a balanced discussion with you, Greg, because every time I mention somebody, you say they're terrible, and it's stupid to say that they're good.
And then
you mention a bunch of wins
better.
Against really bad Zergs, but if anyone tells you they're bad Zergs, you, of course, don't acknowledge that.
Watch the stuff.
What?
Watch the stuff they're doing. Like,
I am watching the stuff they're doing.
Let's resort to specific examples. You know, there's obviously points being thrown out on both sides between, you know, Idra and Jeff. And Jeff, I know, and Idra, this, you know, seems to be one of the common themes that comes up, as we kind of ran into it last week, but, Idra, do you want to cite specific examples or can you?
Well, he does a lot of Warp Prism play, even in the mid game. JYP against, the Zerg and Code, he was fucking doing Archon drops and stuff, and it takes advantage of the fact that Zerg can't do, Zerg doesn't really have anti-air mid-game. That was a cute tactic because you have like 600 shields to burn and they one-shot all the drones. And just they have overall solid play. Like, it was close air positions on Terminus, so obviously it's going to drop, so he has his entire army back in his base, and he's counter-harassing at the same time. He just makes good decisions, whereas Hero sits there and goes DT and sends the DTs, and then expands again, and obviously he's going to die if it doesn't work. That's a lot of risky stuff. And just more generally speaking, I think that the Stalker Immortal two-base builds are the most reliable just because there's no way, real way to punish them. And if your opponent's going Roaches, then you can go kill them. If they're not, then you can just play defensively and take a third base and go up into the high Econ Protoss, which I think everyone agrees is really efficient.
Code A's in round of 32, by the way, Greg, not top four.
That's not right.
Okay. And Larry is playing round of 32 tomorrow.
No, round of 30. Oh, you mean out of the groups?
Yeah. It says round 32 tomorrow, Wednesday, the 28th.
Wait, let me look, because that's not right.
Well, going back to the PVZ.
Did you see Code S? Because Code S is in the round of 32.
Oh, fuck my eyes.
Yeah, Code A played round of 8 a couple of days ago.
Well, how many Protoss are left in the two?
Two Protoss, one Zerg, and one Terran. And the Zergs and Terrans came out of mirrors.
Code S,
I don't know. Protoss have not been doing well in Code S. Neither have Zergs. It's all Terrans. Like, three Zergs and one Protoss, or four Zergs, plus the rest Terran.
That's kind of what I wanted to talk about next. Is that...
Let me wrap up my point, if you don't mind.
Okay, please.
I guess my final point would be... I have a very tough time when we have this discussion, because... Like, it's very easy to talk about the strengths of Protoss and be like, that's absolutely ridiculous. There's nothing I can do to beat that. But I can do the exact same thing where I talk about, I can do the Warp Prism Harass. I can drop DTs around every base. I can be building up the Colossus. And then Zergs walk in with 45 Roaches and 8 Corruptors, and they kill me. I mean, that's the exact level of argument we're having here, where it's like hypothetical situation where it's really hard to beat that. And that does happen. There's a lot of Protosses that know exactly what I'm talking about. A lot of Zergs, too. My point would be, we have to go beyond that and look at the numbers. Protoss players have been doing statistically worse than everybody. Yes, to Terran they've been doing worse by a larger margin, but to say that Protoss was overpowered and then over the patch they got more overpowered when statistically they're doing worse than Zerg in that matchup, I find it really hard to A, ignore the math, and B, latch on to things like, well, every Protoss is dumb, Zerg players that lose are really bad, and the Protoss that win are... all in Code A where no one's heard of them because they won 2 or 3 matches, not like entire titles. I think that's really complicated and difficult.
It's complicated, but it's true. Like, you watch Hung, and he's objectively worse than any of the Code A Protoss to have any success. Same with Tester last season. He got round of 8. Like, in StarCraft 2, it's really easy to string together a series of wins, even if you're not that good, and sometimes it just happens. And a lot of these players are people who had a ton of success early on in the game, like Genius and Hongan and Tester, maybe some others, and they're just on their way out of Code S. Most of them have dropped down by now. And they're the old guard. The new Protosses are doing a lot better with different gameplay that the old Protosses aren't using. And I think it's stupid to look at the statistics of players who clearly aren't on the same level as their competition.
Well, let's put it on the line, then. Do you think in the near future the Protoss players you're naming are going to start having the 7 and 8-0 records against Zerg that their Zerg counterparts were having against Protoss? Do you think it's going to flip
against
because
Zerg?
Of this patch?
Against Zerg, certainly. Not against Terran. Maybe not against Nessie and Lucira, but I also feel that there were no Protosses on the level of Nessie and Lucira while those Zergs were having that success.
Okay, so... you think there will be some Protosses that are literally going to have that 7 or 8-0 record against Zerg players?
I think Sage is already on the way to it. JYP as well. They both have really good records for Zerg in the matches I remember.
Okay. Well, I mean, when some numbers start to back up the things you say, I'll start to actually think it's real. But until then...
Can I just ask a question based off of... you know, I've kind of been sitting back, and I feel like I want to jump in a little bit here. You put some weight into those statistics in Control. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I think the other statistic you look at, too, is all kills in Code S and Code A. Well, in Team Leagues, I guess, not the Code S and Code A, but it's all Zergs and Terrans. It's been, like, one Protoss ever.
And, Idra, I would take it that you are sort of less interested in the statistics and more in, like, your experiences and what you personally have seen?
Well, yeah, just the gameplay itself. There's a lot of things that influence statistics and... looking at statistics for people who can't understand the gameplay.
What do you think about that, Jeff?
What?
Did you say looking at statistics Idra, you said looking at statistics are for people who don't understand the gameplay?
I think that's a really weak argument that you resort to when you can't actually argue, yeah.
It's a typical ad hominem attack from Idra when he can't use actual words to get his point across, like,
No, statistics are another way to convey an argument. It's another way to say, here's evidence or proof about what I'm talking about. If we wanted to do just hypothetical, here's what I think wins all the time, and it never ends up working the other way, then it's a baseless argument. We can do that all day. We can use games and stuff like that. But I use numbers, and I talk about games as well.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's two schools of thought, too. And, you know, right or wrong way, I don't know that that is ever going to be determined, especially here on the show. But I enjoy hearing the two different perspectives on it regardless. So I do appreciate the discussion back and forth, guys. So what do you guys say about taking some phone calls now, unless there's any final thoughts that you want to throw out about the patch? Pain User has been, like, coming and going this whole time, so it's just you guys right now. Any specific final thoughts you want to give on the patch? All right. I'll take that as a no.
Hello.
Oh, you're back. Hello, sir. We're doing final thoughts on the patch, or else we're just going to go to open phones. Should we just go to open phones?
Sure.
All right, we'll do it. Pain User, are you back now officially?
I don't know, man. I just joined the call without video this time, because every time I open it with video, Skype's just crashing. So.
Okay, well, if you feel like you just need to leave video off, then we'll have to all accept that we won't see your beautiful face for the remainder of the, you know.
Is it even working? I just
now it's working. Now, see, it's working fine, dude.
Okay, I can only see Greg, but I don't know. It was just freezing after like a minute every time I returned.
It's too bad, because while you were gone, Jeff took off his shirt. What'd you say, Pain User?
I said Greg and Jeff were still going on every time I rejoined. That was a nice little.
They were. It was a good little discussion. So thank you. We're gonna open up the phone lines now, though. Anything and everything as it relates to.
So, I'm not gonna lie. You guys are really good.
What's that? Who?
Sage is really good.
Oh.
He's fun to watch. Sage. Good against Terran, too.
Alright, let's take our first caller, guys. We got area code 402. That's in my neck of the woods. What's up? Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, didn't think I'd get through, but this is Scott. I live in Lincoln. And I think you actually know me.
Right on, Scott.
From the Nebraska Esports Association.
Right on.
And,
how's it going?
I have a question for all three players, actually. And my question is in regards to organizing tournaments and such. And what I want to ask is, as a player, what are like the top three things for you that like you would like to see from tournament organizers? Like, what are your top three priorities, like, that you could have them do for you?
Listen to the players on stuff like maps, and just players almost always know what's best for the tournament in terms of actual structuring and running it and all of that. And when admins try and make decisions on that, it tends to get fucked up.
So maps.
Okay.
What else?
Everything like that. Maps and format and just basically everything with the actual running of the tournament.
Okay. And control? What are your top three?
Is it called degrading for anybody else in terms of, like, I didn't really understand what Greg just said.
Oh, he sounded okay on this side, but basically he just said, like, maps, tournament format, things that, you know, generally that he would prefer the tournament reference with, you know, the players and organize based off of what the players' feedback is as well. What are your three things, Jeff?
I don't know. I don't know that I have a huge opinion on this. I mean, a lot of tournaments are giving really, really good models to that. MLG does a good job of, if you have a stage match, someone comes and gets you and tells you about it. If you're, you know, if you have a question for the refs, they are extremely friendly and open to talking about it. The NASL was great in terms of, you know, watching the players and responding to them and having someone near them to answer the questions. Like, I don't know. I think StarCraft II has been pretty privileged so far. We haven't had a whole lot of tournaments where it's, like, really, really bad. There's been a few online ones that are absolutely hilariously bad, and that's just, I guess, working with the players and getting them to their matches and making sure they understand the rules and how to upload and that kind of stuff. But, again, I don't know. I don't know that I have a huge complaint or request that terms need to do. They all seem to be doing great.
All right, Scott, does that help? I mean, obviously it seems like just the running and the smoothness of the tournament is one of the most important things.
Yeah, and that's very helpful. I guess in control, you mentioned like online tournaments have kind of screwed a few things up, and it sounds like your complaint is mainly just being clear about the rules and like what the players need to do to upload their replays and that sort of thing. Is there anything else specific that you think could be improved on, maybe like for a small group that's trying to like host their own tournament?
Did you get that in control?
I can't really like the audio's entirely gone from me now.
Oh.
I'm having serious audio issues
like yesterday or something like that
with Skype.
All right, I'll have to. I'm sorry, Scott. I'll have to just go ahead and have you repeat the question now. Can you guys hear Scott? Let me just get that straight. Scott, can you say hello?
Hey, yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Can you hear him now?
Okay.
Just goes in and out sometimes.
Oh, it goes in and out. Okay, Scott, well, try to ask your question one more time.
Yeah, and I'll try to be a little slower this time. In control, you had mentioned that with some of the online tournaments that you had a few complaints that could be improved on, and I was just wanted to clarify, like, what exactly you mean. Like, you'd mentioned that it's sometimes unclear what players have to do to, like, upload their replays and that sort of thing. Is there anything else specifically that you think that as a tournament organizer, if I'm hosting an online tournament, that I could really be on top of to make it easier for the players?
I mean, tournaments are all about the games, right? So anything that detracts away from that and gets it muddy or complicated is just more red tape and more unnecessary bad than there needs to be. Like, there's a few tournaments that came to mind where they had something like a 60% walkover rate because people just flat out, I mean, you had to have an account on 3 or 4 servers, so you had to be changing around. People didn't know that going into it, or it wasn't made clear, or it wasn't made like, it just wasn't made clear enough, I guess, going into it. So the whole tournament became a big, like, some guys got 5 walkovers in a row, and other guys had to play 6 people in a row, and all that crap. So, I mean, if you're organizing a tournament, I think the best thing you can do is just be have a lot of lines of communication done to you, and then you got to be a kind of handler to the players and just make sure that their questions are answered and they can get there and play their games. And as long as they play their games and you can show that to the people, then the tournament's going to have viewership, the players are going to like what they do, all that stuff. So that's just important.
All right, Scott.
Okay,
hopefully,
yeah, I think that helps.
All right, good. Take care and good luck with the association, man.
All right, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. And, yeah, guys, I'm sorry for all the issues. There's definitely been some ups and downs. Pain User, you're with us. We just don't have video, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm alive, finally.
All right.
My Skype's just been crashing for the last 10 minutes every time I join the call, but now I'm good, I think. I can hear you guys. I can see you guys. So.
Okay. All right, good deal. Let's take our next caller here because we are running out of time. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? You guys hear that? He's the quietest caller ever. Caller, can you repeat that one more time? No, I'm just kidding. I would just hang up on him. I don't know how that works out. Let's take our next one. We've got...